Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Today, of all days, is Tuesday, August 20th. It's 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. Tuesday is always a day that harbors all sorts of ideas in our minds, and we would expect Richard Nayrock, co-host of the show, to be on, but he's traveling today. So he's got to do some things, and we unfortunately will miss his esoteric and very, very palatable concepts, so easily understood, so well explained, but we're going to have to do without that. Because I'm your host, Hezzy Harris, and so it'll probably be everything but what Richard Nayrock can bring to the table, which is, as you well know, sorely missed. Well, today's guest is really someone that I'm excited to speak with, Dennis Shepherd. He's the incumbent Yonkers City Councilman representing the 4th District. He's coming to the end of his first term, and he's running for re-election. He's running as the incumbent, and he's got a very strong showing. I don't know what specific lines he's running under, and we'll ask when he comes on. I know that he's a Republican, but I don't know. I know that he carries the Republican designation, but I'm not quite sure what other party designations may have additionally endorsed his campaign effort or have not. But, you know, certainly the most important and the most important endorsement is that of the Republican Party. So there's a lot to talk to Mr. Shepherd about. And a lot of it's basically the fact that he's been doing a lot of work behind the scenes. He's not the sort of guy that's, quick with a blarney, so to speak. He's got a wonderful Irish heritage, and he represents a very large Irish-based community. It's our little Ireland, so to speak. And certainly the main strip, the center of the, I guess, the 4th District would have to be McLean Avenue, and of course others as well. But that is the big place, and he'll be able to relive some of the exciting moments in the district and what he's done and how he's gone about it. He's a quiet man, very reserved, and so I guess we'll get a good sense of where he's at and how he goes about doing his thing. So I'll wait a couple of more minutes just in case he's coming on a little later than expected. And actually, while I'm talking to you, I'm going to try to chew gum and walk at the same time, which for me, as you well know, is not so easy. So let me just see if I can put in his contact info here. Yes, I have it here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to call Mr. Shepherd on the cell phone. Just make sure that he has the number to reach us, and because it would be preferable if he were at a landline, and we'll go from there. But we'll see. We'll just check. So we're doing, I think this is the third ringy-dingy. Hello, Mr. Shepherd. Hi. Okay, for some reason, I think we lost that one. So don't know. Oh. Okay. All right. Well, let me just check a little bit further. Let me do one more. I'm going to do one more call. And all right, we're going to try one more number and we'll see if everything's okay. All right. One more minute, sorry. Oh, God, I really can't chew and talk at the same time. I used to be better when I was younger, I guess. You know, maybe it is a question of age for some, you know, so I don't want to project any of my issues and concerns upon others. It just is what it is. All right, so let me see again here. All right, so we got this here. Let's see if we can move this along a little further. All right, let's dial him at the office. I don't think he'll be at the office at the moment. So, if he's not at the office, what we're going to do is we're going to go on to the second subject of the day, and we'll await his call at a time. Hi, Dan. How are you? This is Hezzy. Good morning. Hey, this is Hezzy from the Yonkers Tribune. How are you? Oh, well. Well, I appreciate you telling me that, but I think we're going to have more this weekend. I wanted to ask you, Mr. Shepherd was supposed to call us up this morning. Does he have the number where he can reach me on the radio show? Because he's supposed to be on from 10 o'clock. Would you? Let me give you the number he can call directly to the radio program. It's 347-205-9201. Oh, that's great. Thanks so much. Okay, thanks again. Bye. All right, well, that's Dan, Mr. Shepherd's aide, and so we'll get this thing moving along. One of the things that I was going to talk to you about, and it's a little bit frightening here, is this situation with regard to the state of the school district. And we'll get to it probably in greater depth as we move forward into the second hour. And one of the big problems is that we're one of the big five school districts in the state. Of course, New York City is the largest. We're the second in Yonkers, and then there's Buffalo and Syracuse and Rochester. And for a few years, actually for the last 5 years, they've been, you know, a tabulation of percentages of students at levels 3 and 4 and so on and so forth were put together. And the numbers have been wavering pretty much. In 2009, in Yonkers, it was 65%, whereas in New York, it was about 68%. And then in 2010, the numbers dropped 39 in Yonkers, 42 in New York. Then 2011, it was 38% in Yonkers, 44% in New York. And then in 2012, 41% in Yonkers, 47% in New York. And then I understand they changed some of the definitions and the testing so that it no longer conformed to what the teachers always complained about was teaching to the test. And this time Yonkers dropped down to 16.5%. New York City to 26.5%, Buffalo to 11.5%, Syracuse to short of 9%, Rochester to 5.5%. It's pretty pathetic. And excuse me, there was a letter, a community outreach letter that there's a section of it in the Journal News. And Pat Paleo, the Yonkers Federation of Teachers president, she had noted that the testing highlights the contradictions of the manner in which the overall teaching is based. And, you know, she suggests that the teachers aren't trained enough. The kids, how did she put it? What would happen if we trained someone to pass a driver's test and then at the last minute substitute an exam measuring how well they can fly an airplane? That isn't quite the case. You know, Ms. Paleo was a little bit off when it comes to that. The bottom line is what's happening is we're not teaching children, students, pupils, how to comprehend what their what the issues. And we're not talking politics. We're talking understanding history. We're talking understanding sociology and biology and mathematics. We're not teaching them how to think. We're teaching them by rote, and instead of allowing each child at their own speed, which is going to happen whether we think so or not, but basically at their own speed to comprehend the issues, and it's for the teacher to appreciate that the children or the students are not learning for whatever reason, and to find what that hurdle is and to explain it until it's understood. It's that epiphany in understanding and learning. And from all the information that's gathered, and kids can gather a ton of information as opposed to older people who just don't seem to be able to inculcate more. The universe is grand, but we evidently are not teaching to a level where the children are at that point in their evolution and development to grasp certain concepts. And it seems we're doing it from pre-K all the way past high school. So what are we doing? We're doing something wrong. So you can complain all you want, but at the end of the day, you haven't moved the equation forward. And this is the problem. The problem is that while adults who are getting paid are not coming up with a solution, you have to ask yourself why it must be that the teaching profession cannot get their act together when it comes to promoting something that works. These are the professionals. These are the best that we have. These are the best that are. So the point is, what is it that we're not doing correctly? And I say to you that if the teachers are mum because they're clueless, then maybe we don't need an education of any kind because we're not producing anything. I know it sounds like it's really tough on the teachers, but hey, can't you get a teacher's meeting? Can't you get every school to come up with some sort of conclusion of what's going on and what's going wrong in that school and in that school district? You can bring everybody together. You mean you can't have an open-minded discussion in front of the whole city, if not even initially first at the Board of Education? What's wrong with this place? How many more years are we going to waste, which will be a child's education? You know, when you're 40, 10 years don't mean squat. You go from 40, you go to 50. You go from 50 to 60, so what? But it's not so important. We'll touch that subject in a bit. Right now, I think we're going to be speaking with Mr. Councilman himself, Mr. Shepherd. Good morning.
Good morning, Hezzy. How you doing?
Oh, it's so good to hear your voice. How are you, Mr. Shepherd?
Okay, very good. How you doing?
Okay, well, we started off telling people that you are the councilman to the 4th District and that you are the incumbent, and you have 4 years almost 4 years under your belt. Can you imagine how time flies?
Time flies when you're having fun, right?
Well, it's a good thing. But you know,
it absolutely is.
Say that again?
It absolutely is.
Absolutely. And I agree. Well, you know what's so interesting? You're a very unique individual. You work behind the scenes in a good way. You're very quiet. You don't come out that, you know, and do a big razzle-dazzle routine and say, well, I've done this and I've done that. But, you know, every 4 years we have to go through the process. So tell us a little bit about, first of all, you. Then we can go into some of your accomplishments in the community and what your intentions are for the future. So first of all, why did you get involved in politics? Or were you always involved in politics because you were engaged in the community through the Hyatt Association and, you know, your involvement that way? Is that what brought you forward?
That's what brought me forward, basically, Hezzy. I was president of the Hyatt Association prior to running for council. I was president of Hyatt Association for 12. So I looked at it from a point of view, be involved in it, that I could actually have a stronger voice in the community and actually make a vote and make a difference even more in the 4th District. So that's what I decided to run. I worked for, prior to that, I was in IBM for 30 years. And was always involved in some operations that IBM handled. I did some volunteer work, and then I looked at it locally, and I enjoy the fact that I can make a difference in the community, and I think I have Starting with, we've had Connor Park. Probably one of my most proudest things with the current administration that we did a 9/11 memorial over there.
Yes.
I think, that's something that there was a park that needed to be done, and turning into a 9/11 memorial, I think, was one of the most proudest things we've done. We've had some other areas in the 4th District that I'm looking to do. Kimball Theater, we've now negotiated with the Thomas Keneally's group to put a 55 and over a building up there, because that's always been an eyesore, the Kimball Theater coming off right into Yonkers itself.
Right.
We also negotiated the gas station on Yonkers and Kimball to have development put there. And we also are in the current process of developing on McLean Avenue and Central Park Avenue, a medical center there. So those are three main areas, in the 4th District that have been such an eyesore, but we're looking forward to doing, development. And we're doing development that's good for the neighborhood. We're not just building something for the sake of building something. You put something up that the community needs, and, it helps everybody out.
I wanted to ask you about that, and I'm not being facetious in any way. I'm looking at the process, which is really what engages me so much, and then all the other issues just are like almost ancillary to it. You know, we're talking about economic development, and you're so right about everything you've just said. I'm wondering, though, was the district hindered in any way because of the changeover in your term, 2 years Amicone, now almost 2 years of Spano? Does that affect the process of bringing forward economic development concerns that the community demands, or is that just a standard cycle in the political world?
I've been fortunate enough, Hetzy, to be able to work with both, the former mayor and the current mayor. So it's been, from my point of view, a smooth transition. I don't look at it like it's Republican or Democrat. It's a Republican mayor, now Democratic mayor, and we've had success with both. And, I feel fortunate enough that that's the type of person I am. I work with either administration as long as it benefits the community. And projects that have started prior to the current mayor have continually, taken place. And it's been pretty a smooth transaction, because you look at it from the point of view that if it helps the neighborhood, it helps everybody.
Absolutely.
And what we also have is a commitment from the current administration to now step up and work with the Raceway to do over Coin Park. We've just got a commitment out of the Raceway for $150,000 to make that park better. So, I don't really care who's in office. I care about, getting it done for my neighborhood, and I've been successful doing that.
Most definitely. And why have you been so quiet about all these accomplishments? These are gargantuan tasks, and I don't have to tell you how difficult it is to move everything forward when it requires investment of funds, getting developers to move in and to show interest, to put together the IDA if necessary, and to create jobs. And yet at the same time, we're living in the nation where times are really tough now. What is it about the 4th District that cries out for more development? What's the pump in the district, other than you, because you're helping orchestrate this?
Well, we have associations, Lincoln Park, we have the Hyde Association, Beverly Crest, who keeps an eye out, in the neighborhoods and let me know what's going on. And the idea of saying, pound my own chest and said, look what I've accomplished. I've never been that type of person. I've been the type of person that if it gets done, if it's a major project like Connor Park with 9/11, or it's just getting a tree or a pothole or some quality of life issue done, that's what makes me happy, because, it's the neighborhood. We have a lot of seniors in our neighborhood who don't know who to turn to. They can't get things done. So if you get a small little detail like a pothole in front of the house filled, You know, it's not a, you know, it's not something, Hezzy, you want to go around and say, oh, look what I've done. You feel good about it on your own. That's your own accomplishment. I
right.
mean, my biggest thing in life, you know, maybe I've been raised that way, is to get it done and not have to tell everybody. That's the tremendous satisfaction you get about it, that you just get it done on your own.
Well, actually, I think we must have been raised in the same household. That's the way I was brought up as well. So, you know, that's really nice. What do you find now? We should tell people that we're speaking with Councilman Dennis Shepherd, who's running again for the city councilman seat, representing the 4th District. He's been able to almost finish the first term, and he's running again now for the second term. Oh, before we continue, we should ask you, you're running as a designee of the Republican Party, and not that you need it, but are you also endorsed by any other party lines?
Yes, I do have the conservative and independent line,
okay.
Both. I have the three lines this time, which I appreciate the leaders of each of those parties, you know, recognizing the work I've done and endorsing me this time. So
that's a
thank you to go out to all of them who has endorsed me this time.
Yeah, that's a formidable endorsement for sure. And so when you look at the district and you see where it is right now, what is your sense of the needs of the district? And how do you hope to be a member of the city council, a member of this administration, even though in a different capacity, of moving the city to be of benefit not only to the 4th District but to other districts as well? But what do you see as the most important for your district?
Well, working to pass a budget that's fair across the city. That's our major responsibility of being city council people. That's what we should do. And my commitment from day one, and I will go on record again and everything, is that my neighborhood is a middle-class neighborhood, like I said before, Hezzy, with a lot of seniors. And to keep those property taxes low and not to go above that cap has always been a commitment that I made in my first term, and I'll make in my second term, because – you know, we just can't continually tax people to death. It's not the way to do and everything. And it's tough to do. And I think this administration has a rough time, as the prior administration did too, because we're in such an economic strife. We've had less revenues coming in, sales tax. We've had payout tax territories. It's a tough budget to run, but we've committed to do that. And so far I've held strong to that while trying to maintain the best suitable quality of life and everything. And one of my issues was always in this neighborhood with the second precinct is to have the auto theft unit and have sector cars. And I have now new Captain Farah there, who I work with very closely to try to maintain that. But it's not an easy thing to do. I mean, it's just not that, you know, you go in and you want to pass a budget, but you try to do it. You don't do it on the backs of the people. So that my commitment is property taxes, keeping them as low as possible, has always been my number one priority in this for this area.
Well, you know, and do you feel that when you went around, for example, going through that process of getting petitions, and it was more, you know, touching of the palms and shaking people's hands, but you've been at it for 4 years, so the community knows who you are. What is it? Do people understand the dynamics of your job? Do they understand the difficulty of balancing the constraints?
Most people do, Hezzy. You have to explain it to them. You have to explain what a budget is, and you have to explain to them that we try to maintain the quality of life with the police, with the fire, with DPW, with the services that the city of Yonkers performs. There's a dollar associated with that.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing comes free. So it's a balance, and it's tough in the sense to try to make everybody understand that I have X amount of dollars and you can pay X amount out. And it's just simple math. And I think people understand when you try to say to them, number of community meetings I've been to is, what do you want? It's not for me. It's not for me, the councilman. What does the community want? If we want more police, if we want more fire, if we want more public services, what are we willing to pay or not pay? And that's the balance. And you get people to try to understand that, that if you don't want your property taxes to go up, then some services might suffer, or we might not be able to maintain the services we currently have. And so when you explain to them, they have a little more understanding of it, and it's a balance. It, you know, it's X amount of dollars and X amount of dollars you can spend. And I, you know, and I was proud of the fact that the last budget that we had no layoffs, and I still think we maintain the quality, you know, the top services. I'm at the second precinct here, and I say it over and over again, we have a new captain now. They do an outstanding job. They really, really do, with the number of police officers that we've had cut over the years. We've suffered here, and that's a big thing for me to always watch and maintain, that makes sure that we have police protection in this area.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. There's something very unique about your district, the district that you represent, the 4th District. We have a large immigrant population in the 4th District. It's our little bit of Ireland, you know, in Yonkers. I guess a little bit of Ireland. I guess we go toe-to-toe with Boston and their Irish community and New York City with their Irish community. But then we have something very unique here in Yonkers and very well established. Change or give a different flavor to the needs of the community, or is that not so pertinent? But certainly the businesses are very Irish focused, and I love it because I like the food and I like the people and I like stores.
It brings the community together. I mean, like you said, we're right adjacent to Woodlawn, which is in a heavy Irish population too, and I think by having that, we've able to, through the associations that are represented in this part of Yonkers, you know, start up a festival, start up the St. Patrick's Day parade. And, you know, does it really matter if you're Irish or not, if you're coming to a festival or a parade?
No.
You know what it matters? That you live in the neighborhood and that you get to meet your neighbor and know your next-door neighbor. And that's a good thing, because then you have developed the watch groups and develop people watching out for each other. And that's an important thing to do in the neighborhood, because, I mean, we go right back to the police thing. The police can't be everywhere all the time. And I know there's been a number of incidents in my area that have been prevented from people just watching out for each other. And it develops a good camaraderie in the neighborhood, actually. It really, really does, you know. It makes it, you know, they call it the Emerald Mile down on McLean Avenue. It's just and you need businesses to thrive, and you need businesses, good, solid businesses to be in there. And I think they've developed that area very well, and hopefully we can extend that into Yonkers Avenue, do that there, you know, and do it in all the neighborhoods to develop that, you know, that I know my neighbor, I don't ignore my neighbor, I'm willing to get involved with my neighbor.
Absolutely. Do you find that the research, the evolution of Empire City Casino and Yonkers Raceway, is that helping to fortify the district, make it more solid, more financially stable? I have always got the impression that the 4th District was one of the jewels in the city because it was so self-sufficient because of the business base.
Yeah, well, my concerns, even prior to running for councilman, was when we were going to put the casino in there, you know, the number of people coming through. And, you know, fortunately, we've been very lucky with, we've had minimal amount of problems. I'm not saying we never had any, but because we've had minimal amount of problems and everything. My concern, and as a councilman, and I go on record too, is the amount of money that the state gives us back for the amount of money that's taken in from that casino. That's always been a concern of mine. I don't think we get the proper funding for the state from Albany, and maybe that's for another later debate day, but I think the Empire Casino, we're stepping up the Coin Park now, and the Rooneys are willing to get involved in the neighborhood. We've had incidents over the years. I mean, in my first term, if you remember how that ugly parking lot that used to sit up there, it looked like we bombed out Beirut. They stepped up. We met with the Rooneys. They took it down. We had some flooding issues on Yonkers Avenue.
Right.
They put more sewer systems in there. So they've been a good neighbor in that respect, to step up to the neighborhood and help us out. And fortunately, we've had minimum amount of trouble with the casino, and I think it's a good thing in their expansion. And hopefully, what'll happen out of that, they've committed some more funding through the IDA right now, the Raceway. The more funding they bring in, that the state would turn around and bring more of the funds directly back to the Yonkers, where the casino is located.
I'm wondering too if about the flooding mitigation concerns. Are you comfortable with where we are, or are we short of funds with that?
Yes, very much so. With the prior administration, Hezzy, we had tremendous flooding on Kimball and Yonkers Avenue, Abner Place, that used to flood all the time. And through a lot of sandbags and a lot of prayers and everything, that seems to be mitigated. Even through Sandy, that was a good test for us and everything, with the amount of rain that came down. We had trees come down, but we not nearly have the flooding, and that's through both administrations. That's something that you said before, how one administration slides into the other. Well, the prior administration helped me big time in that area, and it continues with this administration helping me. And we've been very, very fortunate that we've not had nearly the flooding that we used to have. And the Raceway got involved with that, because we used to have a lot of runoff from the Raceway, and we put some sewer lines in and help alleviate that. So it's been, let's all keep our fingers crossed, but that's been pretty successful so far.
Absolutely. And so what do you, is there a way for a councilman to, any councilman, but do you find that there's an avenue for you to entice businesses to come to the 4th District or to Yonkers? How do people perceive our city, and how do people perceive the 4th District as an investment venue?
Right. Well, I always tell them just to come down to the neighborhoods. We've been successful. We've had Ameriprise open here. I've had probably, I'd say, maybe 6, 7, 8 new businesses open up. Henry Jablaj, who owns the real estate, has just opened another office on McLean Avenue. So we've had success of people. I hope that can spread over to Yonkers Avenue. I know they've not been as successful over there, but you need the traffic. You need to maintain the quality of life. And the biggest thing is you have to provide a safety for people. People have to feel safe in their neighborhoods, willing to come in, walk there at night, walk there, any time during the day, and feel safe. And that's what stimulates, the economic growth. And I've been fortunate enough that we've had some stores go out of business, but other people have moved in where they've left. So hopefully that can continue. We turn the economy around. I mean, it's a solid middle-class neighborhood, is how I describe the southeast part of Yonkers. It's always been solid. We have, church go. We have a synagogue over in Lincoln Park. We have St. Paul's. We have St. Barnabas, the two Catholic churches. We have St. Mark's, the Protestant church right over here. I mean, what a mixture within a couple of square miles of each other of all the religions and all the people. That's what builds the foundation of a community. People coming out, people walking on a Sunday, walking on the avenue, going into the stores and buying stuff. We've had, deals come in on McLean Avenue. That's fairly new. So we've had success. I want to see it continue, and hopefully when we fix up the three areas I mentioned before, that people feel proud of their neighborhood. And that's what people should. You got to feel proud of where you live and what you're about and everything. Nobody should ever take a back seat when they say they're from Yonkers, because you should stick out a little. Yeah, we are from Yonkers. I have no problem saying that.
Absolutely. I think that's almost a given, even though a lot of people forget.
Right, exactly.
Or too conveniently forget, I guess. I was wondering, there are some tough issues in the district. There's a large population of undocumented people in the community. Is there a position that you take with regard to undocumented workers or people who don't have or overstayed their visa here and they're not citizens? We have a large community. That isn't.
I think there should be an avenue for, you know, it's not like, okay, let's just kick everybody out of the country and don't look at any individual cases. I think you should make a road for people to become legal. And I think they should become legal because you want to do that right across the board. Because I know a lot of people from Ireland and, you know, other countries that want to come over here legally. So you got to make it fair across the board for everybody. I think there should be a road. Certainly people who are undocumented over here have kids or in schools. We should make it a way for them to become legal. But you also got to make it fair for people doing it the right way, too, that are waiting in all the in European countries or Asia or Africa or wherever they're waiting to come over here. So, you know, everybody should have the fair chance. But that's what makes this country great, because who isn't? Every one of us are an immigrant. Every single one of us, you know?
Absolutely.
Right? Every one of us came over here at one point in time.
Correct.
You know?
Well, it's very interesting. Did you find in the area, did you find an influx of Irish coming into Yonkers because they had friends and relatives who lived here, especially when Ireland was going through its economic crisis and climbing out of it now quite successfully? But, you know, it's almost hush-hush. But Ireland is doing much better after its major collapse about 3 years ago.
Right.
Did we get an influx of new people?
Yes, you had a lot of people come over from Ireland, and then you had a lot of people go back, and now there's other people that want to come again, and it's more difficult for them to come over here. So I said, you know, these are good, hardworking people. I mean, these are people who want to come over here and have a success story and be successful over in this country, and I see nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, I'm Irish descent, and I've traced mine back to probably the potato famine when my family came over here.
Really?
I've done the tracing. And my wife, being Italian, her mother was born in Italy, and we traced. Her mother came over here in, you know, 1929, and we've done traces of that. So, I mean, it's a land of opportunity, you know, and I'm always for doing it legal. You should do it the legal way, but it gives people the opportunity. And, you know, 99% of the people that come over there are great people. They work. Yeah. They're on McLean Avenue. They're waitresses. They'll do anything for work. They're willing people that just want a piece of America. Nothing wrong with that. Everybody should have that opportunity to come over and be successful.
Oh, absolutely. Well, your roots go all the way back to the 1800s. And I remember Ed Koch, rest in peace. He was Jewish. I'm Jewish as well. He tells me that Ireland is the place of the lost tribe. So.
Right?
The lost tribe of Israel. So we might have relatives back. I don't know, before the 1800s, before the famine. I'm wondering, you know, when you talk about the famine, I was wondering, is it starting to resonate in the Irish community, for example, that it's very conceivable that the whole famine, the crisis of the famine, was really perpetrated by the English government? I know this might cause all our English followers to freak out, but this
hang
is
up on the phone, right?
Yeah,
no, exactly. That's the important thing to do, to understand history. I'm a history buff. I like to read up on everything. So, you know, if we don't know about history, we're doomed to repeat it again. People should get involved in their heritage and find out what happened and read about the famine and read about what has gone on in Ireland. You know, I never, my grandparents talking about just being here, how happy they were to have a job.
Yes.
I mean, just to have a job. I mean, my dad was the same way. He couldn't believe when he first was working that you were allowed to have days off. That was just unheard of. He worked 7 days a week. He when he got off weekends, he couldn't believe, like, you were allowed to have 2 days off. So, I mean, it is important to learn about the history and the potato famine and what's going on. And I don't think any one particular nationality has suffered any more than others. I mean, if you said you were Jewish. I mean, I've been to Europe a number of times. I've been to concentration camps and seen what's gone on. And we should learn about that. That's so important that kids are taught that, so we don't repeat something like that, so genocide doesn't go on again and everything. And it's unfortunate that we live in a world that people are that way, you know? Yeah. So it's important that we learn our history, and we learn about potato famine or what happened during World War II or stuff like that, you know?
It is. It's very true. You know, that's one of the mistakes in life, I guess, maybe because of ignorance of history or just a lack of awareness of who we are as an individual. One's pain cannot be measured by somebody else's. And
right, right.
I guess the best thing to do is to accept someone's pain as their pain. It's their ultimate, and just accept it at that, and deal with it from that perspective, as opposed to measuring who's taller, who's fatter, who's smarter, or any of those things. Those things
I've been
don't...
accused of being tall and fat, so I'm both. So.
Oh, I think I'm ahead of you there. But let's not measure. I guess, you know, that's like one of the big issues that concerns the I guess the district, but also the city and the state and the federal government. And are there issues that as a councilman you can influence beyond your realm, your responsibility as a councilman? Because, you know, you can't be involved in immigration law and policy, but I guess you can weigh in on it. There may be other issues that you could conceivably weigh on, but you don't have final say, so you don't vote on certain things.
The only thing you can possibly use is your influence, the positioning thing. You can't change law. I mean, I had a case where an Albanian family got in touch with me, and I said, well, you know, and they were looking to bring their daughter law, who got married over there, you know, was legally, and
yeah.
I wrote a letter to the consulate in Albania, and I don't know what influence it had, but I thought it was the right thing to do for this family, and we wrote a letter, and I worked with Congressman Ingalls' office to try to get
right.
her over, and we were successful getting over. So it's not a case of like, oh, you have the exact authority to change the law, but sometimes maybe having councilman in your name or something, you have the ability to try to help somebody beyond what their scope of what they can do. I mean, I find Hezzy a lot of time in my area because I said I have a lot of seniors. They just don't know where to turn to. They don't
right.
know how to go about something. They don't know, you know, so they'll call my office and they'll say to me, what do I need to do for this? Where can I go? And you steer them in the right direction sometimes, or you just kind of write a letter for them for support, and I find that successful. And they're so thankful. They're appreciative because they didn't know where to go. They didn't know how to turn. Or something as simple as, you know, their sidewalk is buckling in front of their house, or a tree
right.
branch is hanging over their house. They don't know what to do. So they call, and I'll come out and usually try to meet them and talk to them and say, okay, we can do this for you. The city's responsible for this, or that we're not responsible for this. But you know what? 99% of the time, they just want somebody to tell them what they can do or can't do. And that's
right.
a big help to people, you know?
Absolutely.
That's what you find out. I always said it before, too, with this area, it's quality of life issues. It's quality of life issues. People are good people in this area. They pay their taxes. You know, they send their kids off to good schools. They want the best for their kids, and they just want – they're paying their property taxes, and they just want the services. They want their garbage picked up, and they want their trees trimmed, and they want the sidewalks, and they want the potholes fixed, and, you know, and let me live – and that's why I love this neighborhood. You know, and that's why I moved to Yonkers since I've been here since 1984, and my wife continue and I stay because we enjoy it.
Yeah.
Enjoy this part. And listen, it's a good advertisement. It's centrally located to the city and or up to White Plains. What more could you want?
Absolutely nothing. And I guess we've got it all, don't we? Got the racetrack and the casino and the Cross County Shopping Center.
We've been successful. Like you said, the casino is up, it has given itself a facelift. Cross County has given itself a facelift.
Yeah.
I mean, we go a little bit out of the area. We have Ridge Hill now. I mean, we've had a lot of success stories. I mean, you know, I hate when people there's bad in every city and there's problems in every city, and that's going to be the way until the end of time. But Yonkers, where it's been and where it is now, is a lot better off, and people should understand that and appreciate that.
Well, that is good. It is something. Well, we don't hear enough of that.
No, you don't.
We should. And I'm glad you brought it up. And, you know, I think it's more important when our elected officials speak that way than, media or somebody else. I wanted to ask you about, when we talk about quality of life, there's been a festering concern because right across the border in Woodlawn is the prospect of building a homeless shelter.
Correct.
And how are we dealing with that as a city and as a district? Because it seems that Mayor Bloomberg is very, very pro putting it there. Has that slowed because of the election process in New York City?
Well, hopefully that let me tell you what that's all about and everything. The Hyde Association has been very involved in that, and I've met with the mayor on a number of occasions. The mayor is definitely against it. He's wrote a letter, and I've met with at Rory Dolan's with Ruben Diaz, who's Bronx Borough President, and the mayor,
correct,
and they're both against it. And Bloomberg seems to be the one pushing for this. I don't want it. The mayor doesn't want it. Ruben Diaz don't want it. What we're hopefully, with the elections coming up in November, that we can change the course of this after, you know, Bloomberg is out of office. I mean, it's not like we don't have, you know, we don't understand that people have a right to live somewhere. But that part of it's already taken on a number of homeless shelters.
Yeah.
They've done their fair share up there. I mean, so, and every time you try to, it's amazing. I always find, Hezzy, where people always push something, it's never basically where they ever live. You know,
okay,
it's always
true,
where, oh, I don't live there. I live over here, but you can have this here, you know. So nobody wants it. They're pushing for it. The powers to be, but we're still going to fight it. And we will fight it up until the day, you know, they break ground, if it possibly is going to happen. We don't want it here. And it's not like we don't support, you know, people having shelter over their head. It's just that it's a bad thing. And here's the question I had for them when I went there.
Right.
I said, my question to them was, I represent Yonkers, which is right across the bridge from here. And I said, now, when an incident happens with any of the homeless people, they come across the bridge, who's going to protect these? They said, well, the Yonkers police. I said, well, yeah, Yonkers police. Why is the Yonkers police have to support something that's in the Bronx? We pay Yonkers police. These people here are the taxpayers of the Yonkers police. Why do I have to get the Yonkers police in an incident that's occurring over in the Bronx if they come over? And I said, we're strapped to begin with police support over here because of our economics problems. And they really couldn't give us an answer. So I do have the people in power other than Bloomberg. Everybody does not support that. The Mayor Spano's come out on a number of occasions and does not want it here. Unfortunately, it's the Bronx. So our jurisdiction kind of ends right at the line there. But we're going to do everything in our power, and I know through the Hyde Association, to not have that built here.
Well, that's, I know that the city, I think those people that are aware of it certainly don't want it to be there because it could actually exacerbate problems for us and actually diminish the, the vitality of the business district as well.
Right,
so,
right.
These are big impositions with no return for us. And like you said, the costs would be astronomical because it would create a problem. I wanted to ask you about something else as well. But before we do that, we should tell people that we're speaking with Dennis Shepherd. He's the council member of the 4th District. He is the incumbent. He's served almost 4 years in his first term, and he'll be running for re-election as a Republican, conservative, independent designee in the next November election. And you got no challenges, no primaries for you, Mr. Shepherd, huh?
No, I didn't have any primaries. You know, I beat up the Republican Party, told them I didn't want any. No, I'm only kidding. No, I mean, seriously, I looked at it like myself and John Larkin, who's running and everything.
Yeah.
We had the background. We've had the involvement in the community. John knows his area as I know the 4th. We know it very well. I know it street by street. I've been involved with it, not just the 4 years I ran, but prior to being, you know, association president.
Correct.
So
yeah.
You can't that experience, you can't download that, Hezzy. You either have that or you don't.
Right.
And and there's nothing against anybody who wants to run. It's just that you got to come to the table with more than, well, I feel like running. You know, I have a desire to, you know, I mean, what have you brought to the table to allow you to, you know, it's like a resume. Give me your resume and show me what you've done or not done to support the area. I think I've done that, and I think I've done that well, and I commit to the people the next 4 years, I will continually do that.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask you also about another issue, and that is the issue of the Mark Twain School and the swimming pool. Is there, what's transpiring with that? Because the Board of Education is not prone to discuss issues that they find difficult to express.
I want to keep that pool open, and it's closed. We got it reopened again. It's kind of going back and forth with it because it becomes to a money situation, as usual.
Yeah.
It's always about economics, but I think that's a vital thing. I've had people in the neighborhood who volunteered to be instructors there, and the kids, when you get the kids off the street, it's an important thing to provide swimming or basketball courts where the kids are not just hanging out, because if the kids are hanging out, it's only going to cause more trouble. I support that pool staying open. I will speak with the superintendent to continually have that pool stay open. I know they closed it on occasion, and then we've gotten it open again.
Yeah.
Right now, we're okay with it. Hopefully, that will continually stay open. But I support that 100% of being open for the kids in the neighborhood. You know, and Mark Twain is, you can see over the years the success of that school, which is something I have nothing to do, but it's proud that it's in my area, that people are now wanting to go to that school.
Yeah.
You know, they're pursuing that. They want their children to attend that. So that's a good feeling because I believe 100% in neighborhood schools. I think it should be that way, and I think parents have every right to choose where their kids go to school and nobody else tell them where to go. I fully support that because, unfortunately, what we have now, Hezzy, is we have people with two or three kids, and one kid goes to Mark Twain, and one kid goes to the West Side, and one kid goes over here. I mean, how inconvenient for that could parents be? And that's not the Board of Ed. It's just the number of students. And superintendent, I've worked with him to try to, you know, get that. But that creates family unity, too, when the kids go to the same school, and they can walk from their house like I did growing up. You walk from your house to your neighborhood school, and that creates a camaraderie, too, that we're looking to have.
Absolutely. What else is it, Mr. Shepherd, that, like, I haven't asked you that is important to be said?
Well, I think always to take pride in where you live. If you take pride in where you live, I'm not saying there's not problems. There's no perfect union. There's no perfect city. But if you take pride in where you live and care about your neighborhood, you know what, and do one thing. Do one thing that you live here and say, you know what? I mean, my wife, I've gotten abused for this, and this is not singing my own song and everything. I will pick up the garbage when I walk a street. I will not pass the garbage by. It just aggravates me to see that garbage is laying on the floor. So you bend over, you pick it up. My wife doesn't want to hold my hand then, but that's okay. It's taking pride in where you live, maintaining your house, fixing up, being friendly with your neighborhood. Get out. I encourage everybody, come to the festival or any events that we have in the neighborhood. Walk around. See how you have 10,000 people at an event with no problems, with no situation. Yeah. So you care about where you caring about where you live, Hezzy, because everything else falls into place from that. If you care that you live there and you're willing to get involved. And it's very hard for people to get involved. I used to plead that when I was president of the association. I don't care if you give out a cup of coffee for us. Just do something that makes your neighbor know who you are. And in any event that ever occurs, we all work as one.
That's a very important message. And again, it's another message that we don't hear enough about. It's good. Well, you know, it's always good when a community wants to engage in some sort of discourse and their issues that bind them together. And that just causes everyone to cling more closely, and then you get somewhere with it. It's a good
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely.
Are there any other prospects of concern, you know, into the future? You know, pretty soon, right after the election, we go into Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's Day mode, and before you know it, we're up to the next year's budget and so on and so forth.
Well, the concern is always the budget, Hezzy. I mean,
yeah.
Whether even in good times it's a concern, but more so now than ever before. I mean, you know, I really, you know, with the federal government, the way they are in this state and they're rolling back funds on us, it just makes it tougher and tougher and tougher. And just the normal course of business, what you do, if, you know, we have union contracts that are still not signed. So we have a big challenge. We have a major, and I know we say this every year and people say, well, but we do. We really, really do. You just can't continue. If your revenues are not going to grow like your expense, sooner or later they're going to cross over. I mean, it's just it's mathematics. It's nothing else. So it's not a personal thing against any individuals. Wouldn't it be nice if everybody could get all their raises and everybody could get all the services and everything we want? That would be a great thing. It'd be a very easy council job, too. But you have to sit down and be mature enough and logical enough to sit down and say, this is what's good for the entire city. And I think the administration is looking at it like that, trying to come up with solutions where we're getting our fair share. I mean, you hear that term all the time, and I will say that to the day I, you know, I'm no longer councilman. I don't think we truly get our fair share out of Albany. Now, somebody will argue that, but I just look at that a pure dollar and cents thing. For the number of students we have and for the people, we just don't get the right kind of money here. And I will say that over and over again, and people make that into a political fight of what party's in charge. I don't look at it that way. I look at it, if the kids deserve this or if the city of Yonkers deserves it, then we should get our fair funding. Cut and dry. Very simple to understand.
I agree with you. It should not be a political issue. I don't think that as a city we've been able to maintain a strong enough focus on that concern, and our argument is evidently not being received well enough in Albany. At times I even wonder, like, how come we don't get our fair share of funding from the Westchester Arts Council? You know, we only get like 17 or 18% of the budget, yet we're 22% of the county. I never understood that.
Right, right. Well, I think in a lot of ways, and you could do another 10 shows. I think Yonkers has been the foster child of the county and the state for a long, long time. You know,
Why is that? Because I never understood that.
I think the stigma of Yonkers was not the affluent neighborhoods like the other neighborhoods in the county.
Oh.
But
we
suffered because of that and everything. But our diversity and our, you know, how large we are, what makes Yonkers great. You know, people
Absolutely.
Have to understand that. That's what makes neighborhoods. That's what makes people great. And I think the smaller towns have received the better funding because it is a smaller town and it's easier to control. There's 200,000 people in Yonkers. So I think we've been, you know, a foster child for a long, long time. And hopefully that begins on each corner, on each block. It sounds almost corny, but you have to take pride in where you live, what street you're on, and fix your street, fix your block. And then that block fixes the other block and everything. And I'm proud to say, and not even through my doing, you can see it happening in the fourth. There are certain areas that need trouble, have a lot of trouble. Yonkers Avenue, and the mayor and I are going to be getting involved in that next year, believe me. But you take McLean Avenue, where we did the streetscapes when I was the councilman the first time, and people are willing to come out and get more involved and, you know, go on a Saturday or a Sunday, have breakfast there, sit out with your family. I see so many young kids now, which is great, because then you have people moving into the houses and using the school. Mark Twain School is full. I think there's 600 students in there. And there are more people that want to get into the school. That's good news. That's good news.
That's what I wanted to ask you, too. Is there a change in the demographics? We're getting many more younger people because we've aged.
Right,
I don't know about you, Mr. Shepard.
Oh, I've aged all right, believe me. No. Oh, I've aged already. You just get to look at me. No. No, but that's it. You get more people coming in with smaller children, and then they buy the home. That's exciting. That's what, you know, that's how America works. You know, the people die and the other people buy the home. You get the younger people coming in. And I've gotten half a dozen phone calls or more over the summer, you know, councilman, you know, my son wants to go into Mark Twain. And, you know, I feel bad because I'm trying to help him, but it's also goodness that they're willing, they want to go to the school and they want to stay here.
Right.
That's very, they're not like, oh, you know, I hate when people say, oh, Yonkers. Oh, what do you mean Yonkers? What's wrong with Yonkers?
Yeah.
Oh, well, Yonkers. No, what's wrong? But they can't spell it out. I'll say, well, I'll tell you what's right with Yonkers. I'll tell you what we've accomplished over the years. You know, the success stories. You see this? Do you see this street? Do you see that we've gotten things done? Sure, we've got a lot of trees, but we're finally stepping up to those problems and getting them done. You know, and I'm proud to represent the 4th District. That's why I live here. That's why my wife and I never had any children. I can move tomorrow, but I like being in this corridor of Yonkers. I like representing the people. You have a good time. Sometimes I question it. Hey, what am I doing? But, you know, overall, when you get somebody who doesn't know where to turn to Hezzy and has no recourse and you solve their problem, that's what makes you feel good. I said that from day one, and I'll always say that. That's what makes you do this job.
Absolutely, because that's there's no other rationale for doing it.
Right.
I think it's the labor of love. You've got to love the city.
You got to want it.
Neighborhood. Well, do you find also that I don't know about you, but I've always found the 4th District to be old world style in the sense that people don't wait for government to help them either clean up their streets or, like you said, pick up the garbage or get involved. I always sense that there's the first defense seems to be that people say, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to clean up this. I'm going to clean up that, and I'm going to get involved. Do you get a sense of that as well?
Oh, absolutely. That's why we have not only associations like we have Lincoln Park and Beverly Crest and Hyatt who just do. They just do. I mean, we did it when I was president of Hyatt. There's some certain government things you have to get involved with because the government has to do it. But you know what? Always stay independent from that, too. We're the type that, you know, do a cleanup day. For years we've had a graffiti problem in the 4th District. Now it's minimal, if any, because what we did as an association, we would continually go out there and remove it and remove it and remove it and remove it, and they got sick and tired of being here, you know? And that's a small success story of we used to get hit with graffiti all the time in this neighborhood, and now we really don't. We still get a little bit every now and then, but nothing like we did. So picking up garbage, it's the same thing. You know, cleaning, we have a day where we just clean the parks. Everybody just goes in, brings a little rake and shovel, cleans the park up, and we have Little League there. Or you go into Connor Park. I still do it. And I don't do it to pat myself on the back. I still pull my car up. If I see garbage in any parks or anything, I get out of the car, and it takes me 30 seconds to pick up garbage and throw it in a waste paper basket.
Absolutely.
And it makes the neighborhood, it doesn't mean nothing. I don't care if there's a camera there or if I do it by myself. It's not the idea that me getting recognized for it. It's me doing it because that's where Dennis Shepard lives. That's the neighborhood I live in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and we have a lot of people in this neighborhood. You know, you don't need an army. You don't need an army. You need a good 5 to 10 people that are willing to do stuff in a neighborhood and you can accomplish a lot. And I think if you look at the neighborhood as a whole, if you drive around the 4th District, you're proud of what it looks like. You know, there's always issues. You know, there's always the Midland Avenue where I drive down and go to City Hall, and we cleaned it yesterday, and there's garbage there the next day. There's always going to be those type of issues. But you know what? Don't ever let it defeat you. Don't ever be proud of where you live. Be proud of who you are, and continually keep it nice. And if something if anybody's listening, that the councilman can do, you call my office. And if we can do it, we'd be proud and more than happy to help you anytime we can.
Yeah, we should give out your number at the office. It's 914-377-6314. Right. And
if anybody's and need something, please don't hesitate to call.
I wanted to ask you also about other things, you know, like we were talking about changing demographics. We got an influx of younger people, which is wonderful, and an infusion of new kids going to school. And is the real estate market in your district is seemingly holding up pretty well. And
yes.
At the same time, what do we do about the older population? Connor Park, I guess pretty soon I'm going to be ready for bingo myself. I don't know what's going to happen to me, but, you know, bingo is in my cards. I know it, even though I don't play.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have over in Coyne Park here, we have a big senior center, everything. And, you know, Bernice Freckman has been involved with that for years with the seniors over there. We have a lot of seniors, and now we're going to try to fix it up from through the Empire City Casino. You know, repaint it, fix it up a little, clean it up. We have a lot of seniors over there. And if any seniors are listening, they can walk over to McLean Avenue at Coyne Park, where everybody votes. It's the exact same spot. And sign up, and they'll give you a bunch of information. Or you can call my office, the number I just gave out to any seniors listening. Coyne Park is a wonderful place to go over. They have outings. They have bus trips. They have parties over there. It's a good thing to get involved with. It really is.
And it's a very vibrant community of people who attend. So whenever you go, there's always some activity going on.
Always.
And you build friendships.
Yeah, you build friendships and camaraderie, and you build, you know, like I said before, you know your neighbor. It's very important to know your neighbor. We've had some events on McLean Avenue, and one person came up to me and said, "Wow, I haven't seen my neighbor across the street in years." I mean, that's what they said to me, and I was like, "Wow, that's good." And he said, "No, I went over, I was talking to him, and I said, good, that's good to know that you're willing to get involved, if that neighbor ever needs your help or you know who they are." I mean, we're all basically just trying to, you know, build a nice life for our family, and if you choose this place to live, all the more reason why you should try to maintain it and keep it as nice as possible. And, you know, build a camaraderie with the business people, too. I mean, they're on, you know, McLean, Yonkers Avenue. They're involved. They're just trying to make a living. Go in there. Support the local businesses. It's a very important thing that you do that, too, because I don't want an empty store there. I don't want people to go out of business. I want people to be successful. And the real estate market is starting to pick up again because Henry just opened up a second real estate on McLean Avenue. We just had the ribbon cut the other day.
Yes.
So if a real estate person is opening up another store, you know the real estate is starting to come back.
Definitely. Tell me, how do people become engaged in your reelection campaign? I mean, do you have them call a particular number? Do they visit a particular website or...
they can call the office directly, and I'll direct them from there, you know.
Okay.
There's no problem. You know, I'll be out walking, you know, because my wife says I got to lose some weight, so I don't know. So I'll be out walking, and you'll call the office, and Kim, who is my legislative aide, will help you. I'll give that out, and I'll give the information to you, and we'll work from there. And I do appreciate people electing me the first time, and I hope they'll support me again. And, you know, you always run on a record, you know, and not everything's 100%. I'll be the first to always say that and go on record. But I think overall what I've done in the community, what I represent, what I've tried to do and what I continually try to do, it's not done yet. We still have some development we want to do. We still have some stores we want people to get involved and move businesses in there. And there's always problems and situations that we have to solve, but... I think, Hezzy, you said it best before and everything, if your heart's in it and if you care about it, and you do a lot better job. And this is where I've lived since 1984 and will continue to live. And I appreciate everybody's support out there.
I wanted to ask you before I let you go if I can hold on to you for another second. You know, I forgot, actually, that you were an IBMer. So I guess every time I
say... hold that again.
I'm sorry?
I said, don't hold that against me.
No, I won't. Actually, I hold it, you know, for you. I mean, it's great. It's a unique culture in IBM. How did that translate us when you thought about when you were involved in the community? Was there something special about the IBM culture, that very eclectic world, you know, that you
translated? I worked actually 33 years for IBM, three through college and then 30 years. And IBM is not another company, just like living in a neighborhood. It's team building. And that's what IBM always stressed about, team building and doing right by the customer. And the people that live in the 4th District are my customers. I mean, that's who I work for and I report to. And you always got to do what's best for them. What helped me through IBM is I had a $90 million budget I ran on my own. I was responsible for when I was in IBM. So I knew budgets. I knew it well. And I knew you had to make them and maintain it. And there's so many dollars to give out. So I had my own personal budget when I ran an IBM for $90 million that I maintained. You know?
Well, you know, I'm going to expect a lot more from you for next year in the budget.
Oh, well, wait, easy now. No.
I'm just joking. But that's wonderful that you bring that repertoire of knowledge, to your position as councilman. That's terrific.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you for making the time for the show, and I hope you'll
thank
make
you for having me, Hezzy.
I hope you'll make this a regular event because, we could talk about the issues. We don't have to applaud you, but silently we may just do that, just if you talk about the issues.
All righty, anytime. And I appreciate people supporting me out there, and I hope they'll support me in November.
Okay. Thanks so much.
All right, Hezzy, you have a good day.
You too, sir. Bye.
Hey, bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Well, that's Dennis Shepard. He's running as the for a second term as councilman to the Yonkers City Council. And you can reach his office at 914-377-6314 if you need anything with regard to constituent services and stuff like that. And so that's really very exciting. And you know what? You can actually, you might just want to go and look up Dennis Shepard as in the Yonkers City Council and the Yonkers NY.gov website. So you go to YonkersNY.gov and you can look up Dennis Shepard under the City Council page, and you'll find him there. You'll be able to send him an email at City Hall. I think that when it comes to a candidacy, I think you can get direction of where to call from there. So if you call up his office, he'll have to give you a call for his election office and the people that are helping the process. Because I don't think you can combine the two. It just dawned on me. So I guess I should have pressed Mr. Shepard harder about that. But you know, I don't think it's a problem because you won't be discussing re-election, but asking for direction on where to go and who to call. So that will be good. Well, I'm excited about that. What we should do, because it was so important to speak to Mr. Shepard, let's first find out what's going on at the Westchester Broadway Theater, and we'll go from there. And this is about the... let's play for you what's going on from now all the way through September 8th.
Well, the summer's in full swing, and the Westchester Broadway Theater's got the perfect summer family musical with a standing ovations production of Oliver, now on stage through September the 8th with special Saturday matinees in August. Based on Charles Dickens' classic Oliver Twist, it's the story of the young orphan Oliver, who meets the clever Artful Dodger and the band of young pickpockets, the conniving Fagin, the kind-hearted Nancy, and the sinister Bill Sykes. Oliver contains one of Broadway's greatest scores with unforgettable songs like Food, Glorious Food, Consider Yourself, It's a Fine Life, and the beautifully poignant As Long as He Needs Me. At the WBT, it's the perfect family summer show. And don't forget, your tickets include a delicious served dinner with a choice of six entrees with special items just for the kids. Order tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Bring the whole family out for the standing ovation studio production of Oliver, on stage now through September the 8th with special Saturday matinees in August, and only at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Well, we are back. This is Westchester on the Level. My name is Hezzy Harris. We're going to talk about education issues after the next commercial break. But if you'd like to get engaged in the conversation, you're more than welcome to do so. Our phone number here is 347-205-9201. Again, the number 347-205-9201. And, you know, while we're at it, I guess what I could do is tell you what's going to happen tomorrow. Tomorrow is a full day. We're going to be speaking Wednesday morning from 10 o'clock with Yonker City Council Majority Leader Wilson Terrero. He's running for re-election in the 2nd District. And then following him from 11 o'clock onward, we're going to speak to Jose Roman. Mr. Roman is running for the Westchester County legislator seat against the incumbent. And it's a three-way race, and Mr. Roman is one of the candidates. And then on Thursday, actually, we'll be speaking to the other candidate running for that same seat, and that would be Narissa Pena. And that would be on Thursday at 10 to 11 in the morning, and so on. So very, very interesting what we have in front of us, and I hope you'll join us for the rest of the week. And let me just see what else. Oh, yeah, so I wanted to play this other commercial for you. I almost forgot. Okay, this is a political statement. It's called Mr. 109%. Mr. 109%. Oh, made a mistake. Let me start again. Let me just see if I can go start it over. I know what I could do. I made a mistake here, so we're going to start this whole page over, and I see where I went wrong. I had silenced the volume on this particular ad. Here it is. Rob Astorino's Mr. 109%.
Let's talk to actual constituents of New Rochelle Mayor Noam Bramson. Ma'am, how is Mr. Bramson in office?
Bramson raised our property taxes 109%.
How much?
109%.
Did he do anything else?
Gave himself a 40% pay raise, a free car, and health care for life.
Health care for life as mayor?
As a part-time mayor.
You, sir, anything to say about Mr. Bramson?
Raised our sales tax, our sewer tax,
our library tax.
One at a time, please.
And he quadrupled our garbage fee.
Let me get this straight. While cutting police officers, firefighters, and crossing guards, Noel Bramson raised his part-time salary 40% to around $90,000, and he raised your property taxes, sales tax, sewer tax, library tax, and garbage fee? Anything to say to the taxpayers of Westchester?
Take it from people who know. Westchester just can't afford Noel Bramson.
Paid for by friends of Rob Astorino, Laura Schwartz, treasurer.
And we're back. This is Westchester on the Level. My name is Hezzy Harris. Well, interestingly enough, the Yonkers Public Schools has issued a document called the State of the School District. It was penned by Bernard Perazio, the superintendent of schools. It's dated August the 14th. This is a document that should be available to every school and for every pupil, and naturally for every student, and it should also be available at the Yonkers Public Library, which it is not. Go figure. So, the big issue is the elementary pre-K to 8 data, or data, and one thing that's really very, very annoying is that over a five-year period, we have seen figures continuously drop no matter where you look. So over a five-year period, whereas New York City began the term at 69% and Yonkers at 65%, New York City is now down to 26.5% and Yonkers is down to 16.5% on the percentage of students at levels 3 and 4. Well, this is all very, very discouraging. What's discouraging is that the educational system is trying to suggest that the process of teaching to the test has actually atrophied the ability of the teachers to get something done, to teach. And yet at the same time, considering how powerful the teachers and teachers' unions are, the fact that they have not given voice to these issues, but you have this paltry community letter sent to the Journal News by Pat Pileo, that's not enough. I'm sorry. It just requires a greater amount of time. But, you know, like everything else, if you're 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 or even 70, you know, 10 years doesn't mean squat. But if you're a student and you come in at 5 years of age and you're there wasting 10 years of your life because you're not getting an education, then you've wasted your entire life, even though you haven't even become a full adult yet. And the point is that there is a problem here. And while we're bickering as a city, not only in Yonkers, but everywhere else in the state, we are not teaching the fundamental truth. And that truth is that you should be able to teach, first of all, on one playing field. I'm sorry, but if we want to get into a game of how many people we're going to employ, well, you know, that's not the rationale. Are we doing it for the people we're employing, or are we doing it for the student population? Because let's face it, folks, we've been wasting, what, 30 years trying to employ people in the educational system while the numbers are going further and further down on education? This is not cutting it. If you have a different perspective on it, you could certainly give us a call about it. The bottom line is we're not teaching students how to study a particular subject, what to look for in their study, what to distill, what to decipher, and how to reach a particular perspective based on who they are and also based on the facts. And that goes for every discipline, whether it be simple English, whether it be biology or chemistry or other sciences or liberal arts issues, everything you can imagine, high tech, cuisine. There are things that you need to know, ingredients in teaching, and they all have to be placed on that plate for the pupil to taste and to digest and to enjoy. And they can only do that if they're going to be able to comprehend and appreciate what's on their plate. And that's the job of the teacher. And it sounds really simple, but it's not more difficult than that. Unfortunately, the scores stink to high heaven because evidently, no matter what we teach our pupils, our students, our children in our schools, what's happening is that the scores are too low, because even though every school district of the top five, meaning New York and Buffalo and Syracuse and Rochester and Yonkers, they all dropped in a huge way from 2012 to the 2013 figures. But it's not a measure of any worth. Like, for example, Perazio says, despite the dramatic drop in performance statewide, Yonkers Public School outperformed all other Big Five districts, comma, with the exception of New York City. Does it really matter that New York City comes in at 26.5%, we come in at 16.5%, Buffalo at 11.5%, Syracuse at 8%, almost 9%, Rochester at 5.5%. I mean, come on. These are numbers we want to compare with? This stinks. And yet, the total public education system is at 31%. We're half, almost half, of what the total public education system is. So we want to compare ourselves to New York City, and we come in second? That's not good enough. What we're doing is we're not teaching the elements that will permit a mind, any mind, to be able to decipher, to distill, to formulate, to comprehend, to understand, to digest and not regurgitate, but create a concept within their mind that will be able to deliver the questions asked on the subject matter. There is no need to teach to the test. Ah, but then there are cheats out there, aren't there? The cheats that will tell you that if you get a question and answer test, there are four questions, and you've got to decipher which is best. There are ways to try to decipher each answer and to look at them. And if you know specifically that it's totally off base, you can exclude that particular answer as not pertinent even to the issue being asked. Then you might find that there might be one question or another question, one answer or another answer that seems to conform to the question. So you might be able to delete another issue that just doesn't seem to conform to the question, even though it's part of the same realm. And then you might be able to take a guess at the answer, is it going to be A or B? You get a 50% chance of doing that. But a lot of people are not familiar with this concept of how to reach a likelier response to the question in order to get the grade, meaning that particular answer will go to your credit as opposed to not. But if you start off looking at it, you don't know what the answer is, and you read the answers being suggested and none of them make sense to you because you don't understand the issue, then you will most likely have only a 25% chance of getting that answer right. Or you have a chance of trying to distill based on your knowledge between all those four questions and reduce the chances maybe to 50%, which is much better than 25%, or you might even be able to decipher which one is so off the mark based on the question asked that you might actually get the right answer. But these are gimmicks. These are ways to beat the test, which everyone should learn instead of taking a Kaplan course or some other course that will cost you $2,000 in order to learn. This is what I talk about when I talk about education. This is insanity what we're doing. We're not teaching. We're just allowing another venue for people to be employed. When in reality, if we would learn to employ the students that come before the school system with the accoutrement of knowledge and entice them to consider the subject matter, man, that's when we're starting to hum. And you know what? 10 or 15 years later, we will recognize that these students that went through the process not only are terrific because their minds are so supple and so aware, and they have a broad sense of self as well as subject matter, that they will be able to go into disciplines that matter at the end of the day. And I'm sorry, I speak enough languages to be able to tell you that there is no need to have a special education, English as a second language course. All it does is employ a lot of people. But unfortunately, wasn't it only a few years ago that, Hostos Community College in the Bronx the Grand Concourse, all the way down at around the 130s, whatever the street is. The bottom line is they were graduating students, and only three of a graduating class could even understand or comprehend anything in English. What's the point? What is the point if you don't integrate people into society? This is an English-speaking society. Don't get me wrong. You want to speak Spanish at home. You want to speak Spanish with people who speak Spanish that you meet somehow. not a problem. But you know, when it comes to work, you need to speak English very well. You need to be fluent in the language. You have to be able to comprehend the language. Otherwise, you are going nowhere. Nowhere. Oh, yeah, you can luck out. You can get pushed by this program or that program, and you can think that you're getting ahead. But at the end of the day, you're just swimming at the deep end of the pool with the likelihood that you'll sink at any moment. Sink at any moment. And the point is, it doesn't work. So whether it's be Spanish or Arabic or Korean or Russian, whatever you want, it's no good. You can keep and maintain the connection to your language, to your heritage, to your culture, and to your religion, however you want to look at it, but you must also integrate into a society in which the going language is English. Interestingly to me, I know, for example, when you go anywhere around the world, almost every society in the world is learning English. They're learning English. They come to America, they speak English. And if those that don't speak English, don't speak English. Did you ever see anyone in Syria that they talk to and they don't speak English? They speak English. They may speak it poorly, but they speak English. The point is that if you immerse them, and that's the issue, immersion in a new language. You send any student to any school at any time, I guess up to high school, and they are immersed in a culture of education for 6 months' time, they will be speaking so well that quite often the student population will realize, those from a foreign land will realize how important it is for them to communicate. Hey, you see a good-looking girl, you see a good-looking guy, you want to talk to them. Hey, whatever the drive is, it makes no difference. The point is, you will start to communicate. You will learn. You will learn very, very quickly. And whether it just means saying hello to somebody in your, as a classmate, to ask for a question, to raise your hand, to do this, that, or the other, whatever the case is, you will learn the language. You will never forget your language as long as you maintain it and sustain it in your home, because that's where the sustaining must take place, not on the school property. Whatever language you speak at home, speak it at home. Speak it with other people who speak the language. Listen to radio shows that speak the language. Read newspapers online or offline that speak the language you want to maintain in your heart for whatever reasons, and why not. But at the same time, you've got to learn that this is a different society. This is America. And this is what matters here, English. If you want to go on, eventually evolve and go toward employment, you will need to know the language, and you need to know it well. Otherwise, you're looking at flipping burgers, whether you speak Arabic or Hebrew or Russian or Polish or Thai or Vietnamese or Chinese or Spanish or Italian or French or Romanian, whatever it is. Makes no difference. You'll be flipping burgers, and interestingly enough, you probably will learn the language of English at your employ. But you'll be doing it too late. So the point is, people learn to communicate of all ages. Throw them into the mix, and they will be able to swim. And they will swim from the deep end of the pool in order to save their lives, and you will find them in the shallow end of the pool. And when they come out of that pool, you will start to realize that they have done very well. There may be other uses for all these English as a second language teachers and all these other people. They may need to consider evolving themselves so that they can manage to assist in the process of education. And that's their job, not to disseminate a skill of learning English as a second language. You know what? They can be immersed in English as a second language by just throwing them into the classroom. There was a time when they used to take kids who were not proficient in the language, and they would put them into a class that was a year behind their study. The point is, though, that may have been at one time when they're very young and they're trying to learn, but within a few months' time, they're able to eclipse all that because only language was holding them back. We're just not doing the right thing because it seems to be inconsequential for whatever reasons not to manage to manage education. It's as far as I'm concerned, and you may disagree, it doesn't seem like we're educating much at all. And we've permitted percentage scores to go down the tubes, and that's not quite good enough. And I find that very, very objectionable. I also find what's also very objectionable is the fact that the Board of Education, and as well as the Yonkers Board of Trustees, as well as the mayor of the city, have no comment whatsoever on the paltry, abysmal numbers that will come out of the Yonkers Board of Education school district. I mean, does it matter if we're better than or a little bit less than good as the city of New York? What kind of comparison is this? We're going to compare ourselves to others that failed? So we're going to be the second best failure as opposed to the last best failure? I mean, this is insanity, total insanity. Why is it, for example, that a percent of a student at or above proficiency, Pearls comes in at 60, and everybody else except one, Dicciaro, that comes in about 36 or 37, maybe 38, Pearls comes in at 60, New York State comes in at 30, and everything else is 22, 23, and then some even drop down to like less than 5%. I mean, are we talking crazy here or what? Palisades at about 10 or 11, Foxfire at 8 or 9, School 23 at about 8, School 13 at about 5, Martin Luther King at what, 3%? What kind of insanity is this? What are these figures? These figures are all lies. These figures don't tell you the truth. Why don't we have a breakdown on what's going on at Cross Hill or at Hostos or at Museum or at Scholastic or School 9? What's going on? Why don't we have that breakdown? What's wrong with the superintendent of schools? Why is he lying to us? And every time he opens his mouth, it's, oh, it's going to get better, it's going to get better, it's going to get better, except that guess what? He's going to be out of here in 2, 3, or 4 years, and he's going to get his wonderful paycheck. And in the meantime, he hasn't taught anybody anything. Isn't that special? Oh, God. Just, oh, God. This is insane, too. Look at the math scores. Math scores from 3 to 8 in 2013. Let's see. She says 16.8. It doesn't break this down. One second. I'm not quite sure what this means, but the numbers are no good. Like, oh, here he averages it out. Grade 3, almost 17% at or above proficiency. Grade 4, 21% at or above proficiency. Grade 5, 14.6% at or above proficiency. Grade 6, 17% at or above proficiency. This is math. Grade 7, 9.2% at proficiency. In grade 8, 8.1% at proficiency. Let me tell you something. And I'm sure we've discussed this before. When you speak about, let's say, language, whether it be Spanish, Arabic, Russian, Vietnamese, Chinese, French, Italian, English. Point is, it's a language. Each one of those are languages. Guess what? There's another language that people don't usually conceive as language, and that is the language of mathematics. So whether you come from the hood and you speak Ebonics, whether you come from the hood and it's a mixture of Korean slang and Russian slang and Spanish slang and English slang and whatever communication you learn that is part of who you are, that is the language. You know how some people speak the so-called business person's language of English when they go to work, and yet when they go home, they conform to the standards of that community, whatever it happens to be. But it's also an acquired and evolving language. It's a communication skill that consistently evolves because that's how people are. You know, when you read Shakespeare, there was a different way of giving expression to ideas and concepts. Even grammar was different. English grammar was different then than it is today. There was greater proximity of thinking process in English that I know relates very much to an old Germanic expression of grammar. German has held on to that form of grammar. English has evolved differently. And there are so many concerns that way. And then there's the Romance languages that have a sense of a little bit of the Germanic conceptualization of grammar and English and so on. These patterns also designate a thinking process, a manner in which to distill an answer, find the common denominator. You know, it's almost as simple as saying men think one way, women think another. Women are Venus, men are Mars. Fine, they're all good constructs of thinking. We don't always take the time to appreciate one over the other, or one over the other, whatever it happens to be. That's our own failing. But as a society and as individuals, that we don't move ahead toward that end. We're trying to comprehend, trying to appreciate how other people come to a conclusion. And when it comes to math, conclusions follow a formula which can only lead to one answer. There are no ways of moving off the track. Because while there are parameters in grammar which are okay because the language is continuously evolves, there's a difference when it comes to math. It is standard language. It is a language that pierces the concepts, the mindset, that religion, the ethnicity, whatever way you cut it, math is math. 1 + 1 equals one and only one answer, and that is 2. Division and multiplication, other algorithms, whatever they happen to be, you must study and learn the basics. Just as you learn to multiply the multiplication table, you learn to keep it in your mind. Today, unfortunately, we no longer teach people how to comprehend this. So instead of that, when you go to the burger joint, they show pictures of the cost of a Burger King sandwich, and then the cost, I guess, of an ice cream soda or whatever, and you press pictures in order to get to the costs. A lot of people can't even give you change because they don't know how to give you change. So the computers that are being pressed, people are taught how to put in that you gave them $10, and the machine will tell you what the amount of change should be. Isn't that interesting? So we're trying to overlook that because it's so simple to learn this language of math. Of course, one evolves into different, eclectic, unique, almost out of this world concepts that are thought by the most brilliant of minds, where you come up with new solutions utilizing the math from the past to prove the veracity of the math in the past in order to be able to claim veracity into the future, coming up with new concepts, new ideas that can be explained through the mathematical algorithm. But the bottom line is, the numbers should be higher than any form of English, yet what math teaches one with regard to the dissemination of education based on English is the fact that if you can teach a methodology of communication utilizing arithmetic, math, numbers, numerology, if you can implant that new communication into every child, and you will do so if you offer it to every child, no matter their background, no matter their language, no matter their skills on every other level, they will learn a new language in the same way that we must teach English as a new language. By learning English, one learns also to comprehend in a manner that will distill an answer, as opposed to learning a language, like English is a second language and you're learning Spanish and you're proficient supposedly in Spanish, but you're not proficient in English. And therefore, the proficiency in Spanish does not translate well in this society when it comes to English. I don't know if you realize that or if you recognize that or you want to recognize that, but there is a deficiency because you're not on the same plane. You can't function in Poland by not speaking Polish. It doesn't work. That's why there are so many people, for example, in countries like Holland who not only speak Dutch but speak German and speak French and speak Flemish and speak English. Because those are the languages that is their passport to success. And math, no matter whether you are in Romania or in Greece or in Croatia or in Italy or in Spain, your passport to success is in your language confined to one country or countries that speak the language. But when it comes to mathematics, it eclipses the world. They do not study mathematics in China differently than they do in India, or they do in the United States, or any part of Europe, or South America, or Asia. And that's what needs to be understood. And when you come to language, if you teach the language of mathematics, and it resonates, and it does in the student population of any age, then the bottom line is when you can teach one language, you can teach every language. You put everyone into a world of immersion. And the math, the way it's taught, is an immersion methodology. In the same way that English is a methodology of immersion because you allow it to thrive for that one individual when they are thrown into the deep end of the pool where they must learn to speak English. And when they go home and they have friends who speak the language, their mother tongue, they can be comforted in knowing that that's what they know. But at the same time, they will also learn this new language, which will be their ticket to success. And the fact that we don't have proponents and advocates from the United Federation, Yonkers Federation of Teachers, because we're specifically concerned about what's going on in Yonkers and nowhere else. Not that we're not concerned that this is replicated all over the United States, but we must focus here because this is the only place where we can speak because we understand the differences here. Let's face it, you don't have a problem like English as a second language to such a great extent in Bronxville, the village of Bronxville, or Bedford, or in Somers. It just is what it is. Yonkers is unique. Yonkers is a panoply of cultures and people and religion and ethnicities and language. But if we can teach math, we're teaching a new language. It's a language as unique as any spoken language in which you use words. So the language of is spoken in words and written in words, whereas in math, another language, written in numbers. No difference. But if you can teach, math, if you can teach numbers, if you can teach that language, if you can build on the knowledge of math, then you have the same possibility, probability, and a rationale for teaching English, because English is another language which, commensurate with math, shows you that you can teach English as well as math because, hey, you don't need anything else but to show. You can prove it. There are many ways to prove math, but you also need to learn English. English becomes the language over which, upon knowledge and comprehension of the language, you will be able to learn this other language, and that's the language of math. You need those standards in order to succeed. Without them, you will not be able to move forward. Because the complexity of math is not taught well for those that are learning Spanish or become proficient in Spanish. They're not being proficient in math because the scores just don't show it. Because they're not being taught well enough. At the end of the day, when you're not immersed in language, you're really stuck, literally stuck in the language that you come from. So the bottom line is, if you learn Spanish, if you're trying to learn English and you're a Spanish speaker, you're not getting very much of it. A friend of mine once told me years ago, he's French-Canadian, and he said to me, you know, most Americans don't even realize that they really speak French. I said, how could that be? Nobody speaks French. Oh, he said, yeah, but they really do speak French. They just don't realize it. The words are pronounced differently, but the words are so similar that one could instantly know what the word means and the language. And he explained to me that you only need about 3,000, 3,500 words in order to be able to be fluent in any language. Point is that, like, I recently heard some language that I hadn't heard in a long time. Haven't had an opportunity to speak it. But I was listening to a show, about different subject matter. It was about politics, so it's the language is a bit complex. But at the same time, I'm saying I haven't heard this language in, 30 years. And yet, I remembered many of the basics. There were some words that I had just not heard because I had not evolved. I had not been immersed in that language. And that's the point. English is evolving. Spanish is evolving. But you can't evolve Spanish here in America because it is not the mother tongue. It is not evolving here. Just as Spain is evolving in its use of language differently than they do in Argentina or in Colombia or in Venezuela or Peru, point is it's evolving differently. Just as English, the mother tongue back in the UK, in England, is different than the mother tongue here, which is also English in the United States, as opposed to the mother tongue of English in Australia or New Zealand. you listen to English quite often as spoken in India, you will find an archaic English, which has still maintained a memory of the language, the base of the language that was taught when England was the imperialist power, the colonial power. So that's what you get. And you're left behind if you don't get with the lingo, so to speak. And again, we're dividing. Our nation is being divided by a lack of concern for the language skill. We're allowing the language to disintegrate before our eyes. Not because there's anything so unique about the new type of languages that are being corrupted in different neighborhoods, different communities, but they serve no purpose other than supposed pride in a new way of coming up with this new lingo. It doesn't work. It doesn't work in the workplace. It's the sort of language that will deny you a job. It's the sort of language that we should not even be considering teaching, yet we allow ourselves to be inundated with a lot of this stuff we need to teach to a higher level, a higher plane. I don't know why we're not getting the results we need to get. Something is wrong in the system that we believe or would hope we can send our children to and they will come out stars, but they're not. The fact that we don't do a good job in mathematics proves that we're not doing a good job in English. And the point is that we need to incorporate our methodology of how we teach math in order to be able to nurture and grow our ability to distill and decipher and afford the pupil an opportunity to comprehend and thereby also construct their own concepts with regard to any issue, whether it be an understanding of a recent reading so that they can actually distill what they read, comprehend what they read, understand how it impacts them, and that will be unique. But they need to be able to do that. They need not learn to regurgitate. That whole concept of regurgitating facts that you've picked up, that's not the answer. And I'm sorry to say, if teachers are not equipped with the latest information, I throw that on their back. Not because they're disinterested, because they need to find an avenue in which the information that they need in order to teach well is available to them. The teachers throughout the country are monumental in their force, and they must get together and drive the equation forward and point out how to teach and what to teach. And we also can save money in the process of learning to solidify and create a curriculum that is not only good in Alabama or Mississippi or Missouri, but is also good in Maine or in California, Texas or Arizona or Ohio or Indiana or Pennsylvania. And New York, so we need to build up to that. The playing field is broad, but the baseline, the cutting edge of excellence has to be met. And there is no one that can say we can't meet it, because every child has that capacity. Every child has that capacity. And you know what? We're wasting students' minds if we don't give them what they need, and that is whatever it takes to nurture their interest, their ability to want to know and to know more. And that is the absolute shame of it all. So I see we're coming to the end of the line. And again, I want to thank you for joining us because it's so important to us. And thank you for spending the time with us. I want to thank Dennis Shepherd, the council member representing the 4th District, for joining us today. It was very, very telling in a good way. And tomorrow, Yonkers City Council Majority Leader Wilson Torero from 10 to 11, Jose Roman running for Westchester County Legislator from 11 to 12. And We hope to have you here with us tomorrow. Enjoy the day. And please be careful. It's getting hotter. It's supposed to be really hot in the next couple of days, so just be careful. Bye. Drink plenty of fluids. Speak to you tomorrow.